This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And joining us on the phone live via technology from Florida, Jeff Reynolds, Senior Editor, Restoration News, restoration-news.com, bookmark it, do it. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I am great, and technology is flawless, so we're not going to have any issues.
We never have any issues. Everything works perfectly, like plug and play, always works, always.
That's right.
If only that was true.
Well, and I know, Hunter, because I got a story on here. There were 8,600 lightning strikes recorded over the Pacific Northwest last night. Yeah. And I know it kind of affected some things at KYKN.
Yes. Anybody that was asleep at about 8 o'clock last night might have missed the thunder and lightning storm, which came overhead. I know our family got the chance to go out and hang out under the overhang and watch the downpour. Enough water came down in such a short amount of time that our street was kind of like a little lake because the drainage, even though it was dry coming in, couldn't handle the massive amount of water that came in. I believe we had about a quarter of an inch, and right here in Salem, it only took about 10 to 15 minutes. So,
yowza.
See, things are a little bit different here in Florida because we had the couple of outer bands from Tropical Storm Bertha that came by us, and we got about 8 inches in a period of about 8 days. And, it came down and, a chunk of 3 inches here and a chunk of 3 inches there. And so our creeks were full for like 2 days and then they emptied out again.
It's a different cat over on the East Coast.
Well, of course, all of that electricity in the air has left us a little bit of a challenge. We never lost power. Our streams are up. They're strong. So if you're listening on streaming, great. Unfortunately, our over the air, something flipped a switch somewhere. So we do have a hum and we are working diligently. I actually can see people down the hallway right now as we are adjusting and trying to get rid of that hum as quickly as possible. So
the dreaded hum.
Yes. If you're hearing us over the air right now, you can listen on KYKN.com, listen live or any other streaming service that's got us live right now, because it will be a little bit clearer than our over the air signal.
it doesn't affect the stream. I can attest to that. So, also obviously fire danger. It's always, fire season. I know, Jeff, you don't miss fire season over here. But we have those fire watch apps and everything. And I'm just looking at Oregon and Washington. It might as well just be one big giant flame. I swear. Just pisses me off.
Yeah. Same here. And again, I have to compare it to Florida because I live right in the middle of a national forest. We have a couple of really big national forests in the state of Florida, but we do controlled burns throughout the winter and springtime. And so we've had lightning strikes. By the way, Florida has the most lightning strikes of any state in the union. So, things have been pretty dry this year. We've had several fires ignited and they've grown to maybe a few thousand acres. And then, they've aggressively knocked them down and they've been able to because they've done controlled burns and controlled the amount of fuel on the forest floor. So compare and contrast that to Oregon and their desire to rewild everything and return it to its quote unquote natural state. That's an obvious contrast. What's more effective and what's better for human life? Now, of course, the leftists won't really care what's best for human life.
They don't care. And of course you get loggers out of there and loggers are the best stewards of the forest. And they got them out of there because of the spotted owl. Because they would have to have fire suppression with them everywhere. And they were in there and the roads were open and they could get in there. So if something sparked off, they were able to put it out pretty close to immediately.
Yeah.
And now, of course, we don't have that.
Yeah. By the way, the spotted owl was completely debunked. It's not deforestation is not the cause of the decline of the spotted owl. It's competition from an invasive species.
The barred owl.
That's right.
That's right. Where's our scare music? Because it was the barred owl. And now they want to go out there and they want to kill all the barred owls. It's like, Leave it alone, people. All right. Yeah. we had talked last time you were on, and I think, of course, the buzz, and you've got a great article out at restoration-news.com entitled The Cracks in the Dream Factory Show as Hollywood Decays. Of course, the biggest one that everybody's been talking about is The Odyssey, which I have no intention of seeing, but now it's out. And so a lot of the pundits and the critics and the talking heads have seen it, and it's kind of split, but I think most of them are kind of like, yeah, this is woke trash.
Yeah, and I think somebody, I forgot who it was, but some conservative talking head had a pretty good take on what was going to be the cycle here. The cycle is, you know, they do these deliberate leaks of, you know, the wokest part of the movie, you know, yeah. Elliot Page and the Black Helen of Troy and that sort of thing, and get the right all fired up and, oh, this is completely, you know, ahistorical garbage and, you know, has nothing to do with the original text and all that stuff, which then gins up the online debate and the culture war, mm-hmm. and gets the lefties all out there defending it and going to see it, and oh my god, it's incredible. And you know, from everything that I've seen, it's visually stunning, and it's, yes, it's worthy of an epic from a cinematography standpoint.
Yeah,
but it also, you know, changes the ending of Homer's poem, and you know, so the cycle then goes, well, you know, the right will then say, well, maybe it's not that bad, maybe I'll go see it, and so hopefully they'll end up going and, you know, breaking even on this, and they probably will, but it's not going to be like this huge blockbuster like Top Gun Maverick or something like that. That's going to save the studios.
Well, and I think also it's like, see, and then they can go, see, going woke doesn't mean you go broke. Look at them. They were all blowing smoke. They were wrong.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's part of it, because, you know, Supergirl was certainly a failure. Okay. And, you know, all these other, you know, like Buzz Lightyear a couple of years ago. And you know, even Mandalorian and Grogu hasn't made back its money. And it didn't even go woke. It's just, you know, people are tired of that particular franchise because they completely destroyed Star Wars as franchise. So
they did, and honestly, Hollywood has really stopped telling stories and telling good stories and giving us real characters and treating the audience with even a modicum of respect that we're intelligent human beings that can follow a story without rehashing the plot every 20 minutes because someone's scrolling on their phone.
Did you happen to see, I posted this on Facebook, but there was a tweet out there. This guy says, I want Elon Musk to give Mel Gibson $100 million to film an Odyssey adaptation with painstakingly historically accurate ships, armor, weapons, and casting, all with all dialogue taken straight from the original poem and delivered in Homeric Greek. And Elon Musk responded, I'm down.
Oh, so, my God. I would love that. Well, because we, of course, remember The Passion of the Christ, mm-hmm. done all in Aramaic, and, of course, Apocalypto. Apocalypto mm-hmm. is one film. I've seen it once. It's so intense, but it's a brilliant film. I love that. I would see that. Subtitles are fine with me.
By the way, Mel Gibson, the supposed racist and crazy MAGA, undesirable, is the guy who cast Apocalypto with all Mayan actors and had it spoken in their native language, mm-hmm. and filmed it on location, did all the things you're supposed to do if you respect people and their stolen land and whatnot, whatever the left says.
Yeah, well, in this article, too, and you go into some detail. I mean, you really go into detail because you talk about, they're shedding property and really sort of the Hollywood that everybody, the old studio system is long gone, of course. That kind of faded out in, I think, like the 60s, late early 60s, and then that changed. But now it's kind of shifting again, and we've talked in the past about a lot of independent filmmakers. You've got really talented mm-hmm. YouTubers out there that have built these big audiences and they bring them with them. And of course the monoculture is all but dead. So it's all streaming. So this is I found this very, really good. It really dug in a lot deeper. Of course, we have an hour to chat with you, and I would really highly recommend everybody read this because there's a lot of really good, deep information in here.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point, that the YouTube phenomenon where people, you know, the obsession and backrooms came from an online series that was produced solely for YouTube that created its own audience. And then they came out with a theatrical release at a very small budget and made a bunch of money. And I think that's, you know, whether horror is your genre or not, that's the model to follow in the future. And I to the extent to which the big studios will be able to follow that model, they will survive. But, you know, it's really hard for big institutions like that to actually follow that a new model when they've been doing things their own way for the last 70, 80 years.
And just seeing sound bites in different interviews you hear with people, especially even some of the actors that are in it, who can't keep their mouths shut. And then, you know, they're out there spewing and they're dissing their audience or half their audience. And they just don't, they seem to be digging their heels in and doubling down. So I think if Hollywood goes the way of the T-Rex, it's like, bye.
Well, you know, I'll give you another example of this. Disney, and which owns ESPN and ABC, is going through a huge round of layoffs, right? And ESPN is seeing a lot of its on-air talent because they also acquired the NFL Network. So, they now have or the NFL has a stake in ESPN. It's all very muddled. You know, it's kind of like state-run media now. But you're seeing that... a lot of the on-air talent is being laid off at ESPN as well. And it's the same phenomenon, right? ESPN has specialized over the last decade, at least maybe 15 years, in really just pushing away half its audience because it wants to pander to the woke left and now to the DSA left. And you're seeing the results of that, that, you know, people are just not tuning in when you're already facing challenges in the industry, like streaming, like YouTube, like, you know, independent content that's freely available to anybody who can go find it. You know, ESPN's cable business model, or, you know, cable news model is a dinosaur at this point. And when you really just push away half your audience, when all that's going on, it's just going to accelerate your own erosion.
Yeah, yeah, truly it is. So it's been fascinating to watch, and a lot of it is sort of is self-inflicted. So I don't really, I don't have any sympathy for them, actually. So, but we'll see what happens.
Well, none. I mean, I can remember back to the 90s when I was in college, and afterwards, you know, Sports Center was appointment viewing. Now it's not. No, who cares? You know, you can see all the highlights on X or on Facebook or whatever.
YouTube,
you know,
or Rumble. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. TikTok. You don't have to go to cable television to see all this stuff. And you don't have to wait for it to show up. You can go find it. It'll be available 5 minutes after it happens.
Oh, yeah. And then you can watch the whole season in a weekend and go to work Monday, all bleary eyed. But yeah, well, I do that. So, all right. Again, we're talking with Jeff Reynolds. He's senior editor at Restoration News. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Miller's Barbecue and Catering.
Oh, we got a Miller's Barbecue.
We're trying to make you hungry early. Trying to make you hungry.
I know. Okay, well, then kind of in keeping with the culture, now, granted, I am not a sports person. I will freely admit that. I'm not. Do the Mariners play hockey? What do they play? Yeah. I don't know.
Who won the Super Bowl last year?
Who won the Super Bowl? The Canucks. I don't know. But I've been following this because Hunter and I have talked about this too. Everything that's going on with Caitlin Clark in the she's what with the Fire?
No, the Indiana Fever.
Fever. See?
Yeah. Yeah. The Portland Fire is the Portland team. Yeah.
Okay. See, there you go. But also, so there, it was a few weeks ago when one of the other players on one of the other, I mean, they're kind of beating the hell out of this woman. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of looks like she is the golden goose, because a lot of people are now interested in the WNBA, not me, but a lot of other people, because she's a great player. And so she's bringing a lot to this. And there was this incident with the woman with the neck and everything. And then Sophie Cunningham, who has now kind of gotten a higher profile, and she's out there. She's, of course, if you're familiar with the pointing meme, this very beautiful blonde woman who's out there pointing out, nope, I see you, I know what you did. And it's the meme that's been around the world. But she was questioned at a press conference, and she's basically saying, I said what I said, and she's not backing down. And I love her for that.
Yeah. And you got to kind of go back, because since Caitlin Clark entered the league in 2024, she has been the poster child for kind of abuse. You know, the established women in the league didn't like her. They didn't like someone coming into the league as a rookie with a higher profile. They, I believe in her first year plus, she sold 80% of the WNBA jerseys by herself.
Wow.
It is currently now her and Sophie Cunningham sell 73% of the jerseys of WNBA players overall. And yet, Sophie Cunningham got brought into the Fever as kind of her bodyguard. And so it's kind of created this scenario where you go after Caitlin, Sophie's stepping in. And that's what gained her so much attention, is being that tough girl, being the one willing to kind of take the licks, to step up and say, I'm protecting you. And the rest of the league and league management and ESPN in general hates it. Sophie Cunningham is really a bench player. She is the sixth person on that team, and yet she has superstardom that you would give to a starter difference maker playing every minute of every game.
Yeah, and so just to go back and give a little bit more background on this, Caitlin Clark came out of the University of Iowa, where they won a national championship, and she was a phenomenon. She was setting scoring records, rebounding records, assist records, all the statistical records. She was an absolute phenom. I think NCAA women's basketball broadcasts jumped like 3,000%, 4,000% viewership when she was playing. I mean, it was really a godsend for women's basketball that she was this good. She happens to be white. Mm-hmm. I believe there is a racial component to this that a lot of the black players in the WNBA resent her and don't want to give her the time of day, even though they're all making more money now because Caitlin Clark is in the league and drawing viewership.
And so
Sophie Cunningham, also a white woman, also happens to be very attractive as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of resentment there. And the whole pointing thing came from when a player on a different team, I don't even know her name. She threw Caitlin Clark to the ground and choked her with her hand, and didn't even get a flagrant foul for it. You've seen this happen repeatedly to Caitlin Clark, that she has taken the worst, just most abusive fouls that should get players kicked out of the game, and they don't even get called many times, or they get a simple foul. She continues to take abuse from the other players in the WNBA instead of them embracing her as A, one of their own, and B, their big cash cow that gives the WNBA any sort of interest. And it really points out to me the wokeism at ESPN, where they're trying to make women's basketball a thing, and women's basketball has never caught on as a cultural phenomenon like men's basketball, because they're not as tall. They don't have as much upper body strength. They use a smaller ball. They rarely dunk. And so, it's a wonderful niche sport for the people who play it and the people who support them, but it's not a mass appeal sport like men's basketball. I was thinking about this the other day. I'd actually even be willing to watch women's softball, other women's sports, Olympic sports. I would watch that, but women's basketball just isn't as exciting as men's basketball. It's like watching women's football.
Exactly. And I'm just thinking, now that you mentioned that, Olympics, I mean, women's track and field is amazing to watch.
Sure.
Gymnastics, I mean, figure skating, there are a lot of sports,
diving
that are women excel at. And I think a lot of what Sophie Cunningham is catching heat for is because she's come out very strongly saying that she wants to protect women's sports from men playing in sports. Mm-hmm. And so she's coming out and saying, I said what I said.
That's the red line you can't cross.
I know. And she is not backing down. So my hope, with courage being contagious, is that more women will start to speak up. But I also wonder, you can't remember what they did to Sarah Palin back in the day. She was too pretty. She was too popular. And they had to take her down. I think Sophie may be a little bit more prepared. They did. And so I'm wondering if we may see this coming down, but I don't see Sophie Cunningham stepping down, and I see her as a really great role model for young girls.
She went out, and beyond even that one, She questioned the officiating in the league. She's questioned the higher-ups of why they aren't doing anything. Very unapologetic. I know she's been fined but from the players union and from the league and everything else because of the things she'll say in interviews. And she is not backing down. She is strong. And you just look at it. You know, you talk about eyes on a product and the willingness to watch women's sports. When Caitlin Clark and Sophie Cunningham are playing in their games, they often move them into bigger arenas because they sell out. And they have millions of viewers on television where if those two aren't involved in the game, it is minuscule viewership and they're playing small arenas. I believe a couple weeks ago after this event where Caitlin took the fist in the throat, she was sitting out the next game. They had moved it already to a bigger arena and the fans boycotted the game.
Oh, wow.
So there was a big controversy about that.
No, I didn't know that.
They were selling tickets at a major arena for $5.
Wow. I would like to see Caitlin Clark then follow Sophie Cunningham's lead, because I've seen too many pressers where Caitlin Clark is trying to appease and trying to apologize and make excuses. I would like to see that stop, because that ain't working for her.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I don't know if that's her place.
Maybe don't say anything then.
Well, her place is play basketball. Play basketball and let Sophie take the brunt.
Yeah.
Sophie can be the enforcer. That's fine. The point I'm trying to get at, though, is that, you know, Caitlin Clark is trying to do what she does best, which is her passion in life. Mm-hmm. And she should have every opportunity to do that without the abuse that she's taking. And I think that's probably the tack she's taking is she just wants to not have to deal with this crap anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she shouldn't have to. And she shouldn't have to. Okay. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour news. You are listening to Newsmakers at Noon, and we will see you on the other side of the break.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with Jeff Reynolds, Senior Editor at Restoration News, restoration-news.com, bookmark it. Let's switch gears a little bit. Data centers. Man, everybody is talking about data centers. It's been a hot topic of conversation in Salem-Keizer. It's a hot topic of really in every state because they're kind of coming everywhere. I've seen a lot of people. I know we had Salem Mayor Julie Hoy on last week, and we're talking about that. There is one planned for Salem. Hunter, remind me again where? It was northeast?
East. Side, I guess, according to Amy's maps, where kind of down by the Amazon building on Corbin Road.
Right. So there's been a lot of, you know, there was a change.org petition, which change.org doesn't do anything. It's just data gathering. But anyway, gathering, trying to rile people up to get people upset. This guy put his perspective out there, his facts, and I'm throwing up air quotes on that. So there's a lot of grassroots agita about this, but I'm wondering, is it grassroots agita or is it being driven by somebody else?
Oh, it's 100% being driven by somebody else. I found that very amusing, Hunter. I didn't know that they were putting in a data center right next to the Amazon building, because one of the biggest things that they put out there is, oh, you're chewing up all our farmland. Well, that farmland's already gone, so yeah. You might as well actually do something with it, right? So I wrote an article a few weeks back debunking data center myths on both sides, by the way. I didn't take a position one way or the other. There's so much misinformation going on the pro data center side and on the anti data center side. You know, the pro data center side will tell you that it'll create thousands of jobs, but of course, those are temporary construction jobs.
Yep.
Now, then again, however, you're going to have probably a few dozen jobs created for the maintenance of that facility. But those construction jobs, once that data center is done, will go on to other things in the community as the economic development around these data centers continues to grow up. So there's all kinds of stuff like that where they're not putting out a nuanced or fact-based argument. It's all emotional arguments. And This actually was brought out by Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful from the Shark Tank. Uh-huh. He was invested in a gargantuan project in Utah that was scaled back by a huge proportion because of backlash from the community. And he was like, he went on Fox News and talked about this. You know, where did all this come from? And yeah. And he traced it back to Neville Roy Singham, who's the guy who's married to Jody Evans of Code Pink, you know, and Neville Roy Singham has spent millions of dollars influencing online debate in favor of communism. You know, he lives in Beijing. He's a real bad dude. And so, but there are others, you know, all the same usual suspects, including, you know, Tides Foundation, Soros, Open Society Foundation, Rockefeller, Ford, all these foundations are putting money into misinformation campaigns against AI data centers after Donald Trump, current president, to remind you, stated that it was in America's vital national interest to win the AI race. And he's right about that.
Yes, he is.
That's a very important issue. We cannot allow China to control the data centers that run artificial intelligence that is going to run our economy starting like 5 minutes from now for the next 150 years. So,
that's the motivation, obviously. I mean, you laid out kind of who's behind it. Again, the usual suspects. I mean, take a look at one of Glenn Beck's chalk boards from 10 years ago, and it's all the same people.
It's the same exact organizations.
And it's all, and it's funny, when I look at posts and people that are out there that are on the sort of the against side, it's all the same arguments. And then you'll see there's some handpicked videos of sludgy water coming out of a faucet. And again, sure. I'm not saying that those things aren't happening, because I'm sure they are. There are always downsides and upsides to everything that comes in. I mean, I don't want just to destroy farmland for anything, but like you said, Jeff, the Amazon building is already out there. That farmland's gone.
Yeah, right. And so for my article that I wrote for Restoration News, I interviewed an energy expert from the state of Virginia. Now, Virginia happens to have 70% of all the data centers in the world, or no, 70% of all internet traffic goes through data centers in Virginia for the entire world, because AOL headquarters used to be there. And are several other companies that have big facilities there. Okay. So, and it's close to the Pentagon, and you know how Al Gore invented the internet. So
Now it all makes sense.
Right. So, but the point being, though, that Virginia has had data centers for 30 years. Yeah. And old technology did have a huge impact on groundwater levels for local communities because they did not have a closed loop cooling system. Mm-hmm. Now, modern technology, modern construction has a closed loop system where the water is fixed. They take a certain amount of it and then it's fixed inside their system. So there's no inflow, there's no outflow. So they're not polluting the local streams. And so these new technologies are actually way better for the environment, and also they are building these data centers. What they say is behind the meter, meaning that they're off grid. They're self power. They have their own power source, right?
So nuclear.
Yes, exactly. Modular nuclear reactors built specifically for these things. And what he found in Virginia, his name was Glenn Davis, and so he's actually now working in West Virginia because the Democrats don't want to work with him anymore because, Spanberger got elected governor. So he's working with power companies, and they have facilities in West Virginia. And the funniest part of this is West Virginia is all, you know, fossil fuel, coal and oil and natural gas. Mm-hmm. And so the power companies in Virginia will, when there are Democrats and when there are Republicans in power, so under Glenn Youngkin, they generated more of their own power inside the state of Virginia because they were allowed to do more fossil fuel and traditional fuel sources. But when they when the Democrats take power, they put them back into this regional greenhouse gas initiative, and they have all these environmental regulations, and a certain amount of power has to come from green sources. So they just flip the power companies just flip a switch and import it from West Virginia instead of generating it inside the state of Virginia, because there's no regulation on imported power. So it's all a giant kabuki theater scam.
Good grief. So go ahead, Hunter.
Well, I just think it's so funny that the majority of the pushback on a data center is about the resources, the water or the electricity that they are going to suck from the grid. But yet the same group of people that are kicking and screaming about a data center taking resources, the moment they were offered a discount on an electric car, which we know we don't have the infrastructure to handle electric vehicles en masse, they raced out and bought their electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because you talk about stressing the environmental infrastructure, right, or the electrical infrastructure. Never mind the inability to recycle all of the components of the batteries and all that stuff. When they talk about farmland and they talk about gobbling up the landscape, they have a point to a certain extent. Yeah. But my question, I haven't taken a stance pro or con, but I recognize the fact that our economy is going to need massive AI infrastructure for future development. That's a given. We have to figure out the best way to implement this. That's already baked in. We can't go back to the horse and buggy days. We're not going to, and there are so many advantages that it's silly to even think about. But so my question about farmland is, how much land is actually being taken up? Do you actually have figures? Is it really an alarming amount? Do you know? Does anybody know?
That's a good question. Do they ever bring data? Yeah.
And where does it compare to solar farms?
Windmills. Yeah.
Yes, that's 100%. I mean, it's easily got to be 1,000 times as much land tied up in solar and wind as it is in AI data centers. It's the same argument I always make with people who complain about the existence of sanitary landfills. Oh my God, all this garbage that we produce, it's going to take over all our land. Well, how much land is currently taken up by dumps in the United States? Do you have any idea? It's well under 0.01% of our available land, and it's stayed steady for the last 100 years. Nobody knows this. They just complain that we produce so much garbage, our consumer society, we should drop capitalism because of this and turn to global communism to save the world.
That's the crux of it right there.
That's all about
capitalism.
It's all garbage, and those same arguments are made by America's global adversaries like China, like Russia, like, mainly China, really, the Chinese Communist Party that wants to outcompete us for the AI future. And China is not going to stop. They haven't stopped building coal plants to save the planet, but they accuse us at the United Nations of continuing to emit carbon dioxide. China is still today bringing 2 coal plants online per day all year long. And they have been doing this for 20 years. So, I don't want to be lectured by people who want to see us actually lose the competition.
Right. And I would caution people that are coming down or taking a stance or posting information and things out there to do a little bit more research on it and understand, because the sources are out there. You were able to dig through and find a lot of different sources and find some data, especially when talking to your city councils and your local governments as far as pro or con. And I think I'm kind of with you, Jeff. I don't necessarily haven't really taken a stand on this other than I understand what you articulated. We're not going back. And for us to have control over that is paramount to me. So whatever we need to do to make that happen, however responsibly we do that, I think that's in all of our best interest. But when city governments and change.org petitions and things like that, it's deeper than that. I think maybe dig a little deeper.
Yeah, no, online arguments never solve anything.
They don't solve a thing. And neither does change.org.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I was going with that. But you even said, you know, whatever it takes to win that competition. I'm even willing to concede that we need to have regulations on these facilities and we need to plan them wisely.
Yes.
And we can't just, you know, throw them out in the middle of the city or in the middle of the countryside and ruin people's views. We should have thought about that before we put all those wind farms out in Eastern Oregon, destroying the countryside out there.
And the birds.
Right. And never mind the birds and the whales for the offshore wind.
Exactly.
That's a real thing, despite what the lefties claim otherwise. You know, so, but yeah, there's another proposal also. They also complain about the noise of these things and messing up residential neighborhoods. That's less of a problem with the modern construction. There are mitigating factors that they build into these facilities that make it less of a burden. It's never going to go away completely, but you know, let's think of a city like Detroit that got completely hollowed out in the 90s and 2000s mm-hmm. and turned into a ghost town, right? Why don't we put a bunch of data centers up there where people moved away decades ago and never moved back, and there's blocks and blocks and blocks of unused land where nobody lives. Why can't we do something like that?
Hmm. That's an interesting, and that's going back, talk about going back to nature, taking it back. I mean, I think there's like fox roaming around out there in those mm-hmm. neighborhoods.
Well,
I like that. And again, outside the box thinking and being a little bit more creative about it and being wise about it. Go ahead.
Well, you just kind of explained earlier about, you know, the situation in Virginia, because the one, there's one up in Virginia is the one I see cited the most for the noise and the other things that are damaging to the community. And I sit here and go,
of course,
them being one of the originals is probably a very good explanation of why that is. Oh, it looks like Jeff might have froze.
I think he froze on.
It's all Loudoun County, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a break. Jeff, you're freezing up there. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and take a break and see if we can't fix that connection. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
Alrighty, we are wrapping up our week and our conversation with Jeff Reynolds. And again, if you're listening on air and you're hearing that, no worry. I've been having some friends text and some listeners texting that it is hard to hear. Podcast mm-hmm. should be up at about an hour after we're off the air. So you will be able to listen to the great conversation we're having today with Jeff Reynolds from restoration-news.com. So back into privacy and everything like that, another big hot topic, of course, is Flock cameras. I mean, they're popping up everywhere. I saw a map where you can put your address in and you can see how many are around you. I looked up the station. I looked up where I lived. I look up where I used to live. They're popping up everywhere. And a lot of communities are really not really wanting it. But then there are other people saying, well, it's for safety and it's for law enforcement. And then it's like, but what about my privacy?
Yeah, this effort seems to be sort of a mirror of the United Kingdom, Great Britain, that has become a giant surveillance state with cameras everywhere, right? And, you know, this was popularized in the TV series 24 with Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, yeah.
They could always pull up a camera and figure out where the bad guy went and go chasing after him, you know, it seems cool that we could solve crimes by finding people on cameras. But the unintended or perhaps intended consequences are a lot more severe than we might realize. I have a colleague at Restoration News, Bronson Winslow, who's written a couple of articles about this at restoration-news.com, a lot of this is being done using Chinese AI technology, which is a real problem. I mean, we should not be giving China any data, but we're voluntarily giving it through TikTok and through all these other avenues. We need to take that threat from the Chinese Communist Party way more seriously. That's one. The other is that these cameras are an inherent violation of the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable search and seizure. You are not, the government is not allowed to surveil you without probable cause.
Right.
And so these cameras are institutionalized at scale on a society-wide level. It's surveillance of the entire population, and it's ripe for abuse, which is why we have a Fourth Amendment, and it's ripe for rogue law enforcement officers who have nefarious goals in mind,
which we're seeing.
So that's one thing, but then it's a situation that once you give them the power, they're going to find reasons to use it.
Always. Oh, it never stops at, it's just here. It's for this one thing. And we're just going to stop it there, or we're going to sunset it, or, whatever. We're only going to do this for a little short period of time. And again, you're right, because you are being recorded, and there are instances out there where they were literally showing, they were tracking people. They were using the facial recognition portion of it. And they have been tracking people. There's already an article on The Blaze about 5 police officers that were charged, and they were allegedly abusing it. I mean, every human being is flawed. And if you've got some nefarious intentions, regardless of what job you have, I don't like these things. And you're starting to see a lot of like deflock different states coming up and a lot of people fighting. I know over in Idaho, there's a city, the city of Salmon, Idaho, I believe, that their city council voted to not allow them in there. And so it's like, I wonder if you're going to start seeing more of that. But then you also have the other side of people who go, well, I have nothing to hide. And that's always been the mantra. It's fine. I have nothing to hide. And it's always like, well, until somebody decides that you do.
Right. And they defend them as simple automatic license plate readers.
Right.
And yeah. you don't have an expectation of privacy on a public right of way. That's what they say.
That's what they're saying.
It's so much more than that. It's, as you mentioned, the facial recognition. Mm-hmm. It's pointing them at private facilities and private property.
Parks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Never mind the nefarious stuff involving pointing them at children's facilities and daycares and stuff like that. I mean, there's some real dark stuff that could result from these things if they fall into the wrong hands.
Yeah. So I think we need to have more of a discussion as far as, public safety versus individual privacy. And do we value that anymore as a nation? It seems like the things that we've always sort of cherished as a nation are kind of like, not so much anymore at the altar of convenience or perceived safety.
Well, I would challenge, Flock themselves. Let's get some data. You have these things concentrated in some major metropolitan areas. Show us how many crimes have been solved by use of this camera, because I would argue that kidnapping scenarios are more likely to get a response out of an Amber Alert or a billboard than they are out of a Flock camera. And I just sit here and go, it's more going to become a scenario of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now we get to question you because we caught your car driving through this neighborhood at this time of night when a crime occurred in it.
Yeah, which is what you're seeing in the UK right now. Mm-hmm. There is no presumption of innocence that much anymore, sadly.
And well, they also don't have a Bill of Rights either.
They do not.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier for the king to go in, or even Parliament to go in and say, you don't have any rights.
But the sort of the collective meh from the citizenry, right. at what point are you going to stop going eh? And it's like, nah, this actually might be a problem. Maybe start paying attention to it.
Yeah, no, it's this is why the Bill of Rights is more important than ever. I'm going to be writing an article here soon about how the Constitution is more important with modern technology.
Well, we'll look forward to that, and we'll have you back on again. As always, Jeff Reynolds, Senior Editor, Restoration News. Thanks, Jeff, for joining us. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.